Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Hi, said the smiling clown, bending down to offer his hand to four-year-old Susie. Would you like a lollipop? Eee! Shrieked Susie and buried her head in her mom's skirt, refusing to budge. Would you like a flower instead? The clown pulled an artificial daisy from behind his back and waved it in Susie's direction. Susie just scrunched her head deeper into her mom's skirt and began to whimper. Make him go away, she sobbed. Susie's mom looked at the confused clown helplessly. Guess she's a little frightened now, she said softly. For some reason, clowns tend to make her uneasy. Thanks, though, for being so kind. She bent down to unlatch Susie's arms from around her skirt. The clown is gone now. What was so scary?
He was just too scary, Susie replied miserably.
From a parent's perspective, how can we predict and understand what frightens our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest helps children and their families deal with what frightens children. Dorothy Ward Wimmer is a nurse and licensed professional counselor who is also a certified play therapist at the William Wentz Center for Loss and Healing in Washington, D.C. She has 3 grown children and 5 grandchildren. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dottie.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, we're always astonished at the things kids can observe and not bat an eyelash. But things we'd never even suspect can often frighten them. What kinds of things seem to be the biggest no-nos?
It's an interesting question because there's really no way to predict what is going to frighten children. We know that oftentimes clowns do. Big animals do. Sudden jolting noises, fireworks. It's what they don't expect that is frightening to them. And the most important thing to remember to do is as soon as the child expresses a fear, accept it. Please don't try to talk them out of it. Put your arm around them and say, oh, is this a scary thing for you? Okay. I think as parents, sometimes we tend to be embarrassed by our children's fears. We don't need to be.
So acknowledge, don't say, oh, no, you don't need to be afraid of that.
Acknowledge the fear and then gently teach them. Find out what it is they're afraid of. He's just too scary. Yes, sometimes people that look like clowns, people that have makeup on, can be a little scary. We're going to back up and watch him from across the street so we can learn what a clown is.
It's interesting. I was thinking when we were going through this, a lot of parents want their children not to be afraid of the water, like a swimming pool. And you see people every single summer trying to coax their children or put their children in the water. And the child is screaming and carrying on. And you think, what's being gained here?
Nothing. Nothing except you're making the fear even bigger. Do you know, it's true for adults when we think about it. How many of us are fascinated by, say, a snake, and you see it on television, you say, ooh, that's really interesting, but if that critter were on this table, you wouldn't like it. Well, it's true for children, too. It's, some things are just too close.
We know that what is upsetting to a very young child or infant might not even faze a preschooler. Can you give us some examples of the differences?
That's a good question. Little children are concrete thinkers. So little children see the world in a very reality kind of based way. And they don't yet have emotional grounding to trust that that reality can change. So when things happen that are different, it startles them. And it frightens them. By the time a child gets to be a preschooler, he or she has been exposed to fairy tales and cartoons and stories that parents have read to him or her and circus clowns. And so while they might not like them, they also kind of have a repertoire of coping skills. So please know that preschoolers do get frightened. They just have learned how to handle it a little bit better.
It's interesting. You think one of the earliest games that you play with a very little one is the peekaboo game. And I remember reading someplace that that at some point is very reassuring because they know that whatever it is, person or thing that has disappeared is not disappearing permanently.
Right. They come back. That's important. Yeah. It's that abandonment fear that children fear loss. Children fear loss of people. Loss of their world, loss of security. It's just kind of a primal fear. I need the world to be smooth and solid underneath me.
Is that abandonment fear something that runs through the age spectrum?
Always. It's true for you and I, too.
So if you lose a parent to divorce or to death or something else, mm-hmm. you have, that's reinforcing the fear that the child has to begin with. What would happen if?
Exactly. It's one of the things that we know when parents are hospitalized, for instance. There was one little girl who was brought into the center. Her dad had been badly burned in an accident, and he was in a burn unit, and she was only 4 years old. They would not allow her to visit the unit, and mm-hmm. she was having nightmares and acting out and wetting her mm-hmm. bed again. The poor little kid was a mess. And what we were able to do was negotiate one visit with the hospital, and the child was well prepared. She was going to have to wear certain things. Daddy was going to be wearing special bandages to cover up all the places on his body that had boo-boos on them. I mean, we used words that were appropriate for her, but truthful and respectful. Daddy was on a respirator, so there was going to be a machine next to Daddy's bed, and the machine was going to go pshhh. So she heard the sounds, and that would help to, we explained the IVs. Everything was explained to her. But that was Daddy in there, and Daddy had one hand that wasn't bandaged, and that was the hand that she was going to be allowed to touch. And so she came to the hospital and saw that Daddy was there, and Daddy was alive, and Daddy had special bandages, and she could hold Daddy's hand, and she left. And then we made arrangements for actual pictures to be taken of Daddy as he proceeded to get better, and little tape recordings so that the connection could be maintained as Daddy recuperated. She understood she couldn't go back to the hospital because little children weren't allowed, but that this was a way for them to communicate. Her symptoms disappeared, and
Amazing.
She did
yeah.
very well.
She was
it was
reassuring.
That underlying fear of loss and abandonment
yeah.
that was troubling her. She wasn't afraid of any of the paraphernalia. As long as Daddy was there, that was good.
Wow. That's a really interesting reassurance and clever method to use pictures and things, too. Let's talk a little bit more about fantasy and reality and how the line between them can get a little blurry for young kids. What can parents do to help allay fears in, say, kindergarten age kids?
Parents can tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They can do it softly and respectfully. Never, ever put a child down for being afraid of something. Yeah. You can say to a little one, I guess that would seem scary. I wonder what you really think that is. Well, it's a monster under my bed. Wow, it feels like there's a monster under your bed. Yeah, I know he's there, Mom. I know he's there. Wow. I think if I thought there was a monster under my bed, I would be afraid and I would want a big person to look and make sure there wasn't. So I'm going to look for you. You can stand there, or you can come with me and look under the bed with me. And together, they might look under the bed, or the little one might be hanging onto the door, wherever the little one is. And you help them understand, this is a story, this is real. You know, monsters are under the bed in cartoons sometimes. But in our house, we have locks on the door and locks on the windows. Remember, they're concrete thinkers. Tell them truth that they can relate to.
My oldest son wanted to keep his two younger brothers out of his room when they were little, and he mm-hmm. used to tell them, there's a man in my closet. You don't want to come in my room because there's a man in my closet. And so for years...
Well, that's a little different.
It was really very interesting because, of course, they knew there wasn't a man in the closet, but they didn't really want to look.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he went off to college, his room was there for them to use for slumber parties. His was the biggest of the three kids' bedrooms, and he had an extra bed in there and everything. They could really use it for having their friends sleep over, but they didn't want to do that because that man in the closet might come out and scare their friends. And so last year when we moved out of that house and the three boys were in their 20s and 30s, there was a lot of laughter and joking about we better make sure that the man in the closet doesn't come to the
That's right.
But That's those right. kinds of things are, he really did play on what were real fears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about nightmares? We're hearing that those are things that happen because there's something going on in the daytime or there's something in developmentally that would make a difference. What can we know about nightmares?
Well, when it comes to what causes nightmares, there are as many theories as there are theorists. So let's be practical and acknowledge the fact that a child is having nightmares. A couple of things that you can do. One is to listen to the child. Let him tell you the nightmare. And then make a plan. Plans are very empowering. Let's think about what we can do when you have a nightmare. I bet if you could draw that nightmare and put it on that piece of paper and then put it in the envelope and close it, or draw it in this book and close it, then the nightmare wouldn't have to be in your dream space anymore. The nightmare would be in the book. Find out from the child. Frequently writing it, drawing it helps. Simple thing of leaving a light on. We've had children that have had to make a little string, or take a string, and they tie it from them to their mommy's bed. And they just know if they tug on it, mommy will come. There are wonderful books about having nightmares. And some of those books help the child to understand that maybe my nightmare is about the fact that I'm really, really, really mad. And once he learns how to deal with the anger, his nightmares stop. But sometimes we don't have to bother to explain. We just have to accept them and find out, what do you want to do with them? What can we do? Where else can we put this nightmare?
That's a big clue, though, to say, let's think about what we can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
That would never have occurred to me, and I think that's really brilliant.
And it empowers the child.
Yes, tremendously.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of what frightens children.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dottie Ward-Wimmer about what frightens children.
Middle school children have a whole different set of anxieties, more specific, I think, to their age group. What would be some of those?
Middle school children now are, you're talking about prepubescent kids, right?
Sandy and I usually call them tweens when we talk about them.
Okay. These are children that are really coming into their own socially. And so their fears, while they are about all of the usual kinds of things, the fear of abandonment that we've already talked about, the fear of somebody getting sick, the fear of accidents and what have you, also become combined with the social fears. My goodness, what if I go into the classroom and they don't like what I'm wearing? What if the teacher makes fun of me? What if I get the answers wrong? What if my body isn't pretty enough? What if I'm not graceful enough at the dance? So we get all these different kinds of social fears and school-related fears that we start really seeing in those tween years.
I'm so glad I don't have to be one again.
Very difficult.
Nature is a good plan.
That's right. Uh-huh. I have a niece and nephew right in those years now, and my niece is particularly self-conscious about her hair and her weight and all of these things. And my sister-in-law has reassured her. She keeps saying, you know those other girls in your class? They're really not interested in you. They're only interested in how they are coming across. Don't worry too much about how they feel. Worry about how you feel and what you think of you. You're the only person who can have anything to do with that. And I think that's very good advice.
The teen years bring stress for parents and kids. What do we typically need to be alert for that might be scaring our teens?
That's going to depend in large measure to where this teen is living. For instance, in Washington, D.C. and in other cities, children are afraid, teens are afraid of street violence. That's a real legitimate fear. I mean, all fear is legitimate, but these kids are really worried about plain survival. I'm not sure that that is always as true in other places in the country. I guess some of it would depend on how dangerous the environment is. So that has to be considered. What's happening universally for teens is now we're really worried about our future. I mean, these kids are savvy. Teenagers are very savvy. Let's not think that because they're a teenager, they don't get it. They do. They understand the dangers of terrorism. They understand the dangers of drugs, even if they don't seem to behave responsibly around it. They're starting to understand what's out there. They're afraid for the loss of their own future. If it's not necessarily primal fear of what's going to happen if I go out in my neighborhood and get a stray bullet, it's what's going to happen if I don't get into college, or don't get into the college of my choice, or even worse, if I get accepted to the college of my choice and the financial aid package doesn't make it possible. How are my dreams going to come true? How am I going to get to be an entertainer if I can't get into the film school that I want to get into or the school of the performing arts that I want to get into? How am I going to get the scholarship to play football? Because that's who I am. I'm a football player. I mean, you've seen them carry to extremes, I'm sure, in Texas, when the cheerleader's mother actually did physical harm to her daughter's primary competitor. That was bizarre. But the fear of future, the fear of success.
So parents can buy into this. Instead of helping it, they can make it
worse. Parents can buy into it, and they can feed it. They can feed it.
So where are parents? How do we help?
You help, interestingly enough, long before the subject of fear even comes up. And you help by doing everything you can to support and nurture a growing child's ego. By saying on a daily basis, what a good kid you are. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy having you around. And when a child does something, let them know, that was a smart idea. When a child has a problem, don't give them the answer. Ask the child, what can you do about it? What are some of the things you can do about it? And he comes up with two or three answers, maybe good ones. If they're not, say, interesting answers. Have you ever thought about, and then you can kind of slide the right answer.
Right.
But give him the power or her the power to think and to choose and to feel grounded so that when, however the universe throws things and triggers in front of them that might be fearful, they say, yes, that startled me. But I can deal with this, and I have a support system that can deal with it.
Dottie, what are some basic rules of thumb for dealing with kids' fears that apply totally across the age spectrum? Things like almost all children lose a pet, for example. I have to tell you, personally, I lost my children's dog when the dog was 18 and a half years old, and the children were no longer home. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who's suffering with this loss.
Absolutely.
I'm grown up. They want me to get another dog. I can't imagine going through that again. So I can really identify with children who have a pet they love and then they lose it. They lose a friend who moves away, or in my son's case, he was in second grade when a friend died.
Mm-hmm.
How do we deal with some of these things?
It's very important to allow children to have their feelings. I'm so glad you're asking these questions, because the least helpful thing we do to children is to assume they don't get it, or to say, oh, well, he's just got to get over it. You know, tough it out. Far better to acknowledge the loss, to talk about it in real words. Don't try to cover it up. Don't get another goldfish. Don't get another dog right away. Acknowledge that something has happened and invite those feelings into the room. What was your dog's name?
My dog was Bernie.
Bernie.
Yeah, girl dog.
Girl. Oh, a Bernie girl. And to talk about Bernie girl. You might read them The 10th Good Thing About Barney, which is a story of an animal who died and how the family dealt with it. But talk about how much you loved Bernie. Talk about how much you're going to miss her. And even acknowledge the fact that sometimes the feelings are so big that we might want to cry or we get angry. Just kind of put it out there and allow them to have those feelings. It's very important.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of what frightens children.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dottie Ward-Wimmer about what frightens children.
I think particularly in our culture, still, boys of a certain age range feel that they are not allowed.
Absolutely. Boys and men in this culture are so not allowed to cry, and so they have a different way of expressing it, which goes to kind of the next rule of thumb. We're going to acknowledge, we're going to invite, and we're going to make the plan. Remember that so powerful plan. You know, Bernie's gone now. What should we do? How are we going to say goodbye And how are we going to remember Bernie? And some children might say, oh, we can bury her in the backyard. We can, however it is you're going to do, we can keep her picture on the mantle. We can, you know, make her favorite meal. She used to love your pot roast, Mom, so let's have pot roast for dinner tonight. Whatever it is, let's make a plan. And the plan will include, and sometimes I will feel really good and I won't be thinking about Bernie. What shall we do in those moments when our hearts are sad?
We've buried a lot of animals in my family, raising three sons, and we've had very sad funerals, and even the boys cried.
Absolutely.
That was a very good thing, having these funerals outside.
And that's part of the plan. It might just be that you need a hug. So when you need a hug, or you're just kind of saying, oh, it's one of those days, Mom, what would you like me to do? For heaven's sakes, Ma, don't hug me. Okay. You can just tell me that you're feeling, and I'll just say I understand, and that'll be enough. But it's all part of the plan. Children get to choose. They get to acknowledge the feeling and then understand that they have a choice of how they can express it. That's what it's all about, so that when they're feeling angry, they can choose. And it allows them to modulate feelings because they can choose then. Instead of punching their little brother, they can choose to punch a pillow. They can choose to go out and shoot baskets and just really whack that basketball in the driveway. But they're learning how to make choices in a real way about how they feel. So we're going to do those three things, and then we're going to comfort them in whatever way is appropriate. Mm-hmm. You can hug. There's always chocolate. You might think of them. You might ask them. This leads to kind of the fifth thing, because you're going to teach them how to take care of themselves. What makes you feel better?
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to do now? What is it that makes you feel better? Well, I think I want to picture Bernie in my room. We can do that. We can have another picture made. And together we'll go by a special frame. And you can teach children how to take care of themselves through these moments. And even when they're afraid.
And I think when you build up a repertoire like you're talking about, that if you have a fear, then you can do this and this and this. That helps the kids, I would think, further on, to do it for themselves. All right, I'm frightened. Now I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this.
Absolutely. I worked with a young man not so long ago who was dreadfully, dreadfully afraid that he was going to literally what is called falling out. In other words, kind of get hysterical during a commencement. And the reason was that they were playing the class song, nobody's fault, and purely serendipitous, class song reminded him of his mother who had died. Now, this is an eighth grade student.
Oh my gosh.
Moving into high. He would have been devastated. And so the most therapeutic thing we could have done for him was to make a plan. And that's exactly what we did. He didn't need intense grief work at that point in time. He'd already done it. We needed a plan. So we had a plan on how he was going to take care of himself, how he was going to distract himself. We taught him how to kind of put his arms like, you know, you look like your arms are crossed, but the palms of his hands were literally. And he was kind of just patting himself and saying, it's okay, it's just a song. Just a song.
Wow.
We had a gym teacher lined up along the side. This kid was lined up so that he wasn't, according to hide her name, but he was at the end of the row, because what are kids afraid of at this age? Embarrassment, social situations. So he was on the end so that if he did really get upset, he could walk out and nobody would notice. And this gym teacher, who was his favorite teacher, and he trusted this guy, was just standing very casually over at the side. Didn't have to. And the plan was, if something happened and he was so upset and he couldn't contain it, he would simply walk out and the teacher would follow him and they would just take a walk.
Wow.
So that he could have his feelings and not be embarrassed.
Wow.
So you have to figure it out and make a plan.
Well, this is terrific. You've used people as resources also, which is
always
really, really significant. Which gets us to our last question, which is, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about children's fears?
There are a lot. Some of the books that I've found useful and parents that I know have found useful. One is entitled Monsters Under the Bed and Other Childhood Fears, and it's by Dr. Stephen Garber, G-A-R-B-E-R. There's another one that's really useful to read with the child themselves. That first one that I mentioned is for the parent to read, and it's a book called I'm Scared, Dealing with Feelings. For little children, Mercer Mayer, you've probably read a lot of Mercer Mayer books, all those wonderful little books. He has one called There's an Alligator Under My Bed and There's a Nightmare in My Closet. One of my very, very favorite books that I use all the time for kids of all ages, and I make the big kids let me read it to them, and they kind of say, okay, Dot. But even they get a kick out of it. It's a book called The Kissing Hand, and it is the sweetest, sweetest story of this little raccoon who doesn't want to have to go to school. He's afraid. And so what Mama Raccoon does is she kisses the palm of his hand, curls up his fingers, and says, anytime you don't like it in school, just squeeze your hand, and you'll feel it. Because, of course, the kiss worked its way all the way up the arm and sat in the little guy's heart. And that night, he's very brave, and he's going off to school, and the last thing he does is say, Mom, put out your hand, and he kisses her hand so that she won't miss him. It's just a beautiful, beautiful story. And there's another one for those folks in your audience who are of the Christian, hold Christian beliefs. This is a book that's kind of devotional, but it's interesting for teenagers. And it's called Teens Talk About Fear by a woman named Aranda Gladden and Renee Talbot. Two women wrote it. And finally, I'd like to give you a website. And there is a program that's run by the federal government, and the Wendt Center is part of it, and it's called the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. They have a website, nctsnet.org.
And what does it do?
It is a wonderful, wonderful website. They have information on everything from school terrorism to fears to talking about 9/11 to, it's just a wonderful resource for primarily for parents, healthcare professionals, if there are any counselors, school nurses, psychologists that listen to this program. It's a fabulous, it's just a wealth. It's literally a think tank of some of the most brilliant people in our country who are dealing with children and traumatic fear. Children who have come in from other countries who are dealing with the fears that have to do with settling in a new land. So children who are dealing with hospitalization fears. It's just a wealth of information in that network. So that's a really good website to have.
Well, you have given us a wealth of information. We are so grateful that you have come. Dottie Ward-Wimmer, we are just delighted that you have been able to share so much with all of us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 198. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. A generous grant from the Hospital for Sick Children Foundation in Washington, D.C. has made today's program possible. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.